The world has risen green again. The days of summer are upon us. The beauty of this earth grows before our eyes. Seeds we planted weeks ago have pushed up through the dirt. The young sprouts, so succulent to slugs, each reach for the light as the sun warms the earth again. Beauty rises all around us. We are surrounded by beauty. Last week, I was in Ontario with colleagues, and in the 5 days of business meetings and professional conversations, there was one day when we did a workshop, because we always need to be learning something new. The workshop was based on the work of Joanna Macy, her profound environmental awareness work called The Work That Reconnects. And it addresses the interdependence of life, the animal, vegetable, and mineral cycles. One of the exercises was to give us a firsthand experience of the many ways that we can reconnect to the natural world and experience its beauty. We were put in pairs for a sort of a trust walk through a beautiful park. I was leading my partner first, so I saw what they did not see with their eyes closed. I introduced them to leaves and branches and grass and fences. I could see the blue sky my partner couldn't see. I didn't experience it, the world, through all the other senses as she did. At one point, we were allowed to suggest to our partners to open their eyes. And whatever they saw in front of them, we were then to say to them, what you see is a reflection of you. So when it was my turn to close my eyes and be led by my partner, I was introduced to all those myriad textures. I felt I felt a really large tree in front of me. I embraced it. It was smooth to the touch, not rough as bark I expected it to be. So then she asked me to open my eyes. And she said, what you see is a reflection of you. Well, the first thing I saw was a little bug who was very busy doing bug work. And then I looked up at this tree trunk, and I saw that this was a dying tree. And it had lost its outer bark. And the bugs were reclaiming it. It was full of life, but a life that reclaims and transforms. I did feel sadness for the tree, and yet I also appreciated my colleague's offer to contemplate that full cycle of life and death, the full wholeness of breaking up and breaking down, of growth and decay. My friend Larry Lillo died of AIDS back in the 80s. He had been the artistic director of the Vancouver Playhouse Theatre Company, and I thought of him as an absolutely brilliant director. I'd gone to him to ask if I could assistant direct for him on his first production. And he continued to be my teacher and mentor for many years. He was teaching and mentoring me still when I went to visit him at St. Paul's Hospital. And he told me a story filled with the clarity and important human insight that comes when one's days are short. He had recently been to a friend's house to a party. And while all the adults were inside eating and drinking and having adult good times, he was sitting quietly under a tree in the backyard, watching some young children play. He became part of the tree. They didn't notice him. They were young, probably 2, maybe 3 years old. At one point, they began fighting over a toy in the sandbox. And then, in the middle of this, one of the children shifted and became the peacemaker, soothing the friction, caring for the hurt feelings, reconciling the play relationships. The balance was reset, and then quickly the three of them were happily playing all together again. Larry sitting under the tree in his imagination. I saw him sitting on the hospital bed with eyes bright with life's fading intensity, told me how beautiful was the moral goodness of these children. That they could care for each other, that they could act from an innate sense of right and wrong without interference by adults. I would agree with Larry's teaching that we are born innately moral. We are born with an innate sense of what is right and wrong. And that left alone, we would choose conciliation and goodness, forgiveness, and altruism. Moral beauty is the beauty of human action when it upholds the dignity and worth of this human species. Moral beauty is when our thoughts and behavior are aligned with our heart, when there is an unimpeded flow and a sense of rightness in our behavior. Moral beauty is a thought and a feeling and a physical sensation aligned. Beauty comes alive, this beauty comes alive because there is always a choice to make. To be moral means that one can be immoral. If there is no choice, then there is no moral decision to make. Moral implies choice. If a bunch of students are sitting in an exam and they're seated really far away from each other and there are monitors walking up and down the aisles, there's no opportunity to make a moral or immoral choice. Moral is not in play. If the students are sitting close together and there's no teacher monitoring them, then the power of moral choice is in play. Each student becomes alert to the opportunity, the possibility of looking at his neighbor's paper or not looking. Even if we are born with an innate knowing of right and wrong, we are still affected by our environment. The influences and the pressures of family and culture and society can warp or overlay or bury what we came into the world knowing. Every child requires love and approval. We all need it to thrive. But if parental approval and love requires us to immoral action, we will, when we are children and maybe beyond, choose love first. If the parental unit is missing, we will seek the approval and the love of our peers. And we will align our behavior to guarantee what we get, that we get it. So we hear our teens say, oh, it's okay to do that. Everybody else is doing it. Our sense of right and wrong becomes based on externals, on what is happening outside our body. If everyone else is doing it, doesn't mean it's morally right or morally wrong. It simply means everybody else is doing it. And if you're a teenager saying this at the teenager time in your life, I really hope that you have the voice of a grandmother or a father who you hear saying to you, hey, if everyone jumped off the cliff, are you telling me that's what you do too? Come on. Implying that to be true to oneself, to reference one's own sense of what is right and wrong, was the more self-aware and perhaps more mature choice to make. It's almost as if the path of our lives intentionally moves us as far away from our innate sense of right or wrong so that we can then look back on ourselves and see with an objective self-awareness that living a A moral life requires us to make conscious choices. We are being taught to be conscientious, to have a conscience. And that majority rule doesn't mean one loses one's sense of right or wrong just because everybody else is doing it. Ultimately, it's up to us. The power is in the choice. And reciprocally, making the moral choice empowers us. That is the feeling of satisfaction, or perhaps a feeling of integrity that settles on you or warms you from the inside when the life-enhancing choice is made. I would say that moral choices are life-enhancing. Immoral choices diminish our light. One strengthens the beauty in the world, the other reduces the beauty. And yet, even with the best of intentions and the desire, not everyone can make that moral, beautiful, good for them, life-enhancing choice, even if they know the consequence is their own death. I'll call him Matt. Matt was a hard-living 35-year-old. Raised in poverty and violence, his life skills were learned on the street. His innate moral sense was replaced with the requirements of survival. As a young teenager, he was enveloped by the local Hell's Angels. In their circle, he was held and seen, and he found a sense of belonging in that organization. I met him as he attempted to make a huge change in his life. He wanted to be an actor. In the acting program where I taught, he had the opportunity to get to know himself a little. He got to experience a world outside of gang life. And he began to be seen and accepted and loved for simply who he was, not what he would do. The closest to unconditional love that he had ever known. He was like a starving person and could hardly take in the love and the encouragement that we gave him. So hungry his desire, so damaged his ability to absorb it. But we kept reinforcing the fact that it was he who had begun the process of this new direction in his life. It was he who had chosen a life-enhancing path. In the cocoon of the four-month program, he began to open and grow in confidence. But as the end of the program loomed and he needed to take the next step, his new confidence began to crack and crumble. It was too like the shell of that little duckling. You know, the duckling came out, or the chicken came out, and the feathers are still wet, and they can't quite fly yet. That's where Matt was. It was heart-wrenching to see the fear begin to grow again, and the ability to make a different choice lose ground. In agony, he sat in my office and mapped out what would happen to him if he went back to Alberta. He knew that if he returned to the Hell's Angels in that life, he would be dead within a year or two. And it broke my heart to feel his desire to live a different life, yet see that he didn't believe that he could make another choice. If making moral choices is innate, it is also deeply affected by the life experiences we have. The love and the respect that we experience, the confidence that we have in ourselves that comes from self-love, as well as the guidance and the encouragement that we receive, or the lack of it. As in most things, it is never this or that. It is this and that. When we know what the life-enhancing choice is, when the God of our heart stirs within, as the words of the song go, and we feel its power. We are in a holy place. We are nurturing moral beauty every time we sense the life-enhancing choice and choose it. And perhaps part of our job is to love others so that they can get to that same place. It is a lifelong process called maturity, called self-awareness, called growth, called coming home to our true selves. In this process, let me suggest that being a Beacon member helps, because we choose to belong to this Unitarian community because it can encourage us to remember that deeper, truest self. And we all need reminders, and we all need encouragement to live a life of moral beauty, simply to counteract those daily external forces and pressures of majority rule, which can be very, very influential. Listen to your heart, that inner beauty, to the song of your beautiful moral heart. I'm going to flow here into a meditation. You can keep your eyes open or closed, whichever helps you. I ask that you settle as you are consciously now into your heart and simply consciously breathe in and out from your heart as the noises of the world move around us. Focus on the breath of your heart and imagine your essential goodness flowing on each intake and exhale of breath. The true goodness that lives in your unguarded, most open, most trusting, most loving self. Here in this moment, this protected moment, let your goodness flow with your breath. Let all that is beautiful of life and living, the whole process, flow through you on each breath. The mystery and wonder of singing stones and dancing waves, the northern lights and the desert blooms, the experiences that you have had in your life of beauty, the awe of light and shadow, the smile of love and warmth of friendship. You are safe. You are whole. You are beauty. We are safe. We are whole. We are beauty. Continue to breathe through your heart into this day and remember this moment. Remember, we are beauty.